You are listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church, including our gathering times in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart.
Well, I've mentioned here before that out of a unique set of circumstances, I've been able to spend quality time with some Navy SEALs. It's been one of the greatest honors of my life to be able to do that. And part of the fun of that is that these guys tell great stories, because when they're training in the States, they do endlessly fascinating things. So while you're maybe at the office returning emails, they're out in the field learning how to fire a grenade launcher. I remember when I was in seminary talking to one of my buddies, and we realized we both had some tests coming up, finals, and he was like, what's your final on? I was like, oh man, I'm really stressed. It's on Greek participles. It's very stressful. I was like, what's your final on? He's like, oh man, it's on how to stalk a guy. I was like, what? And I was like, what does that mean? Like, you're out in the jungle, you sneak up and grab him? And he was like, yeah, that's it. It's kind of a pass-fail thing. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's just fascinating conversation. So I remember there was one time, there was me and two of these guys, and we were up in Seattle for a wedding, and one of them was a dear buddy, so I was driving, we were in shotgun, and we would catch up the whole trip, and then the guy sat in the back was a nice guy, but didn't say a word. Like, not mean, just had nothing to say to me. So this whole trip, like, we would visit, and we would not. Except there was one moment where my buddy over there was telling me about this book and kind of commending it to me. And I was like, man, I'm kind of reading a lot of books right now. Like, why should I read this book? And when I asked that question, for the first time, he spoke to me. And he said, it's about the warrior mindset. And I said, okay. Now, let me tell you a little something about you. If that guy that's been sitting back there, wears all black, jacked, and you know could decimate you, begins to speak, you're going to pay attention, all right? You're just going to listen to the words. And when he's the guy that you remember, that when they did that TV show on Buds, that grueling process to become a SEAL, and there was that one episode about Hell Week, that's with all that pain without the added benefit of sleep, and you remember that he was the guy during that episode that at one point ran past the camera smiling? When that guy is offering you a window into how that mind works, you're gonna pick up the book. And I did, and I read it, and it was about the warrior mindset. It was about the Spartans, not from Michigan, the ancient culture. And the Spartans, let me say, had many things about them you would not want to emulate. All right, let me just say that. But they had two things going for them. The first was they were a very focused society. Focused. And for the Spartans, their focus was entirely upon warfare. To the degree that when you were 5 years old, they would walk you out into the field, and as you began your education, there was no humanities, there were no electives, it was all just like, here's how to kill a guy, right? They were just focused. And so they developed a system of warfare that would devastate their enemies. I don't know if you saw movies back in the day like Braveheart, where just a bunch of people would just grab some weapons and just run out there. Spartans wouldn't do that. When they showed up at a battle line, they would form up in ranks. And then when the signal was given, the men in the back would each put their shields in the lower back of the man in front of them. And then when the call was given, they would all commence running in unison. And as they did that, interlocked together, essentially what happened is they became a massive human battering ram. And they would just decimate their enemies. So much so that if you were a Thessalonian or you were Athenian or someone like that and you showed up to battle and you saw the Spartans lining up on the other side, you might have brought like a sword or a spear, but as soon as you saw them, all that got put down. You just picked up the pen and paper and started writing terms of your surrender. Go ahead and send them all the livestock, send it over Bill, send over Bill's family. I'm sorry, man, they're gonna kill us, right? You would do it. Because they had two things. They had focus and they had unity. And whenever you get a community that is focused and unified, you have a very dangerous crew. And the SEALs are like that. It's a very focused community, and they travel in packs. And the early church was like that. The book of Acts, when it was talking about the first followers of Jesus, it says they were devoted to the apostles' teaching, that they were fixed on the message about Jesus. They wanted to know him. They had their mind's attention engaged on it. And it said they had everything in common. They were constantly sharing with one another, meeting each other's needs. They were focused and unified, and the world could not stop them as they were changing literally the culture around them. One of their detractors says in frustration, "These people are turning the world upside down. We're watching cities change and cultures change." Why? Because these people were focused and unified. And wherever you have a group of people that are focused and unified, you have a very dangerous crew. Now, why mention that? Because that's what the book of Philippians is about. Philippians was written by the Apostle Paul, who had unapologetically fallen in love with Jesus. Before that, he had been a judgmental, shallow religious person, following a list of rules and being legalistic and whatnot. But when he came into encounter with the love of Jesus Christ, it convicted him of his sin and his brokenness, but in that same moment offered grace and forgiveness and adoption into the family of God. And when he came to know Jesus, that you see the worst in me, but love me and change me from the inside out, he fell in love with Jesus. And Paul began to travel the known world preaching about Jesus. And when he came to the Philippians, he told them earlier in the letter, "You are partakers of grace with me. You know what it's like to know you're broken and to know that he loved you just the same. You've tasted of that grace." And when you did that, he said, you became the fellowship of the gospel. We're a community around this cause together. Why? Because we all love him. How do you know you're a Christian? You love Christ. How do you know you're saved? You cherish your Savior that came for you. And so he looked at them and said, you know he's better. He's better than any success or accoutrements. He's better. They had focus. But the Philippians had one problem. They weren't real unified. They had trouble getting along, which I know is hard to imagine. You're like, Christians that don't get along? Man, I don't understand. Just take it by faith. Centuries ago, this was an issue for the early church. It's actually not that hard to imagine, is it? I mean, even within our churches, we can sometimes be as cliquey and weird as junior high, right? Even among churches sometimes, churches preaching the same gospel, it can be hard to celebrate each other. Some of you have maybe even heard that as one person's talking about how much they love their church. You've maybe even felt the inclination, go, oh yeah, that church is great. I mean, if you love inauthentic worship or whatever, I'm sure that place is awesome. Like, why can't you just celebrate them, right? That we get an insecurity in us. Some of you felt that here. That you've come here, man, I'm gonna come to this church, I'm excited. And then that person you walked in that you saw me, you're like, I just love this church. Oh no, how did you find us? I mean, how did you find this church? Like, aren't you moving? Shouldn't you though? And you're just like, I don't wanna be around them, even within us. I remember when I was in college, there were two Christian men's fraternities that whenever they played each other in intramural football, they had to bring out extra referees because there was gonna be more cussing and more fouls than any other game. And you go, how do you know that? Because I was a referee for a very short time. And I remember watching that. They were like, here come the Christians, right? And you're like, what? That's crazy. But you're like, but the Bible verse on the back of their Christian men's fraternal t-shirt is different than our Bible verse on our Christian men's fraternal t-shirt. And so we must go to war. You're like, really? But the truth is, some of you go, man, I don't feel like that, man. I don't have any enemies. I mean, there are some people in here that I can't stand, don't like being around and secretly rejoice when they fail in life. But I don't have enemies. But look, let's just be honest. Even within a church like this, it's growing and it's amazing. There's gonna be some people that get on your nerves. Like I remember for me in college, there was a guy that would always invite me out to lunch. And then when we would get there, he would have forgotten his wallet. Did it many times. And it was always at a place I couldn't afford, you know, and I would be so frustrated. And then I would have to sit there for like, I don't know how long, hours, because he chewed so slowly. And he took 32 chews before he would swallow each piece of food. And you're like, Ben, how do you know that? Because I counted and averaged. Because he would do it with his mouth open. And everything in me would say, man, it's paste. It's ready for the next stage. Swallow, man. Right? But the Bible says I gotta love him. And not just that, but that I can't look like Christ without him. Paul told the Ephesians, God gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be teachers, to the builder of the body for the works of service, that what God's rigged it that way, that his Spirit puts different gifts amongst us, so I will never be who God has made me to be without you. You will never be who God made you to be without her. And you will never be who God made you to be without him. God's rigged it that way, that your human potential cannot be reached just by you as an individual. You need us. And spirituality is always worked out in the context of community. It is always worked out in the context of community. So you and your career ambitions will never become all that you are meant to be under God. You need us. God built it that way. And so when Paul, out through the beginning of this chapter, he's been talking about the beauties of Jesus and what it is to know him. Then in verse 27, he says, only. Barth says it's like he held up one finger and said, I just want one thing from you. He says, only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ. Let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ. And you go, boy, that's a big statement. Live in a manner worthy of the sacrifice of Jesus. What does that mean? Well, there's something kind of cool going on here, if I can geek out about the language for a minute. That let your manner of life be, it's one word in the original language, Greek. It's the word politeuistai. Politeuistai, which I know what you know what it means. But for those who don't, polis is the Greek word for city. It's where we get like metropolis. Polis, it means city. To politeuistai means to discharge one's duties as a citizen of a place, to live like the citizen of a city. This is the only letter Paul uses it in. And he does it on purpose because he knew it would get a reaction out of the Philippians because the Philippians were proud of their city. See, the reality is, one Greek writer said it, that a man without a city was not a man. That the reality is your city was where you got your identity. It's where you got your sense of worth. Some people do it from their college. Some people do it from their sports team. Some people do it from their interests. Back then, it was your city. Your city is your identity. And so he uses this term, live like a citizen of a place, because he knew the Philippians were proud of being Philippian. Because in 42 BC, the armies of Antony overcame the army of Brutus, you know, Brutus who killed Caesar. Et tu, Brute? Really happened, right? And Antony and his forces charged out and went to war against them and fought so courageously, so bravely, that they awarded them a city, Philippi. And in the city of Philippi, gave them all the accolades of being a Roman citizen, although it was nowhere near Italy, nowhere near Rome. Some of the benefits of being a Roman citizen included things like autonomy and never having to pay taxes. So you were pretty happy about being a Philippian. And so the reality is when Paul looks at a Philippian and says, politeuistai, live like a citizen of a place, something just came out of them. I want to embody the characteristics of that community I want to be a part of. It was like in Texas when I would say in crowds, hey, is anyone a cowboy? Anybody that was proud of that, like from the South or something, just something would come out. They'd be like, yeah, man, maybe let their belt buckle show. Yeah, my dad's got about 30 head of cattle, and they don't even know what head of cattle means, but they just want to take on the characteristics of that society, right? Or if I said, anybody play football? You don't show a belt buckle, what do you do? It's kind of flex a trap, make your neck look big. Or, yeah, man, I was a linebacker in middle school. You're like, oh. I'm going to say, is anyone playing a band? You don't flex if you play in a band, you know? And you can't be too excited. You can't be like, I do, I play the bass. You're like, no, it's kind of be like, what's up, dog? Yeah, I play a little bit. It's whatever. You know, you just naturally take on the characteristics of that community you want to be associated with. And so here Paul says to the Philippian, politeuistai, live like a citizen of that place. And that draws out of them, man, our people fought courageously. They fought bravely. They made a wake for us. They made a way for us to experience benefits of a citizenship of a place that has all these benefits I didn't earn. I want to live into that. I want to embody that. I want to step into what they won for me. I want to have that same kind of courage. I want to have that same kind of idea, mentality, lifestyle. And then Paul flips the script on him. He says, yeah, but politeuistai in a manner worthy of Christ. Not as a Philippian, as someone who knows Jesus, because he says in chapter 3, because your citizenship, your politeuistai, your polituma is heaven. That you belong to him, that he's the one who fought for you. He's the one that beat back the darkness for you. He's the one who took on your guilt, your shame, and buried it in the grave, and then rose victoriously. He's the one who knocked the weapon out of your enemy's hand of condemnation, that you can be a son of the king, a daughter of the king, a child of God. He has done that for you. And now he says, live into that. Live in a way that matches that. And so some of us hear that and you go, what does that mean? And it's interesting, I would ask people all the time, man, what does it mean to live in a manner worthy of Christ? Live in a way that was worthy of all that Jesus did for you. And people say things like, well, man, we should really read the Bible more and I should give more money and we should get into small groups and all those are great things. None of those are the things Paul says. Paul says, Jesus has done all this to build a community. He has cut awake to build a family. He's built a city. Live in a way worthy of that. What does worthy of that look like? Everything Paul says next is about unity. You want to honor him? Get along. Love each other. You want to honor him? Love the people he fought for. Love the people he died for. Take care of them. You want to love me as a pastor? What's the best way to love me? Love my kids. Be nice to my kids, right? If you came up to me and were like, Ben, dude, I think you're so cool. I'd love to hang out with you. I got to be friends, but I just got to tell you something. Your son, can't stand him. Like, you and me are cool, man. I'd love to hang out, but you got to get him out of here. I don't want to look at him. Like, what do you think I'm going to say? Yeah, he is a loser. Let's get him out of here. That's my kid. There's no separation. I love him, even at his worst. But I remember showing up at a church once. I'm not making this up. I was in like a row, and there's a dude in front of me, and he's this worshiping man going for it. And the church was crowded like this, so everyone had to scooch. You don't get your extra seat for all your paraphernalia and coffee and gear. Like, someone's going to have to get next to you. And so he shows, he's there worshiping, and this woman comes in. You can tell she's like a mom and is getting the kids organized and all her stuff. So she slides into his aisle, and she bumps into him. And she bumps into him, and he does this. And I looked at him and I was like, dude, do you think God gives a rip about the next thing that comes out of your mouth? That's his daughter. You want to love him, you love her. That was the moment. And that doesn't mean what you sing doesn't matter, but when these are out of step, he cares a lot more about her than what you're about to say next. You want to love him, love us. You want to honor God, honor the people he fought for and died for. Love us. Love us. That's what we're meant to do. We care about a community. How do churches die? There's complexity with why a church fails, why churches die, but I'll tell you one of the most common ways churches die. It's not because some exterior force crushes them. It's because as people start to come, people start to gossip, people start to go, well, why do they always do that? Well, that girl's always doing that. Well, she always gets to lead worship, but they haven't called this person. Well, that person's doing that. You know, I don't like that guy. You know, I've never liked this team. You know, they don't know what they do. And we begin to die, not by some big outside oppressive force, but just by the little paper wound razor cuts on the inside of tearing each other down. And Paul looks and says, man, Christ gave it all for us. I just want one thing for you. Only conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ so that whether I am absent or come and see you, I will hear that you are standing firm in one spirit. I want to see you in one spirit. I want to see you together. And then he gives you reasons why you need unity so you can stand. That word stand firm carries the idea of feet planted so as to offer resistance. The Spartans, when you would go to battle, you would come with a shield, and your shield covered not just you, but the man next to you. And so they had an understanding. My sword is for my enemy. My shield is for my brother. That's why in lesser armies, you can read historical record. As they would approach a battlefront, as you got closer, I would want this guy's shield to cover me more. I would lean in, which would lead him exposed. There are stories of battle lines collapsing before the first clash of a sword because I'm just going for mine, and I don't care that it makes the entire community go in disarray. But the Spartan wouldn't do that. I plant my feet and my shield. My sword is for my enemy, but my shield is for this guy. I need to stand, and we need to be united so we can stand. We need us. And here's the reality. Some of you want to walk with God. You're here because you want to grow in your faith. But the reality is when you go home and you're alone, it's in the secret places and in the quiet places that lust is tearing you apart and stealing your confidence, stealing your hope, stealing your ability to believe that God wants to use you. Some of you, it's your anxiety that you try to process on your own, and it's even ripping you up physically. Some of you, it's discouragement that is just burying you under shame so that you haven't risen up to help serve us and love us because you're so buried. There's all these kinds of things that get us in isolation in the secret and the quiet place, and we are combat ineffective in advancing the gospel of Christ because when we go out in the world, we go out alone. And yet I know some of us hear this and you go, well, so I'm going to like confess my struggles to all you people? Heck no, man. I don't want to do that. I'm going to be like David. David fought his Goliath alone. He beat his giant by himself. This big issue in my life, I'll beat it by myself. Well, yes, David had to march out and fight Goliath on his own. And sometimes you will have to face some struggles alone, but keep reading. Because yes, he beat Goliath alone, but a few chapters later, he goes out to war and it says, and then David became weary and a descendant of the giant pinned David down and was about to kill him, had a new sword for the occasion, and it took Abishai to step in and save David's life. And some of you have struggles and you're like, I'll just do it on my own. Yeah, sure, man, for one night, two nights, maybe if you're feeling real strong, a week or two, but when you're weary, when you're discouraged, when life beats you up a little bit, weariness plus opportunity leads to failure. And some of you, that has been your whole cycle for years. And let me tell you something. You go, I just want to confess my sins to God. You should confess them to God, because when you confess him, he is faithful and just to forgive us and cleanse us. You want forgiveness? You got it in him. You want healing? You want a new quality of life? You need James 5:16. Confess your sins one to another and pray for one another that you might be healed. You want healing? He's given you a method. It's called us. We need to be united so we can stand. And some of you, the only victory you're going to experience in life is when you're willing to stand with an us, with an us. I remember the first time it really landed on me. As a young 20-year-old entering into ministry, there were some areas of struggle in my life that I didn't want to share. I didn't want to tell anybody about. So I did what most young people who follow Jesus did. Well, I'll just get real disciplined and just kind of knuckle down on some disciplines. That's what I'm going to do. But what happened over time is you can't discipline it out. And I got to a place where I was like, what am I going to do? And I felt like I stood at a crossroads where I could become that person who has an exterior spirituality, but then a real inner reality. And I was like, do I want to be that guy? That when I show up here, I know how to play the game. I know how to say God is good all the time. Yes, he is. And I know when to worship when the bridge hits. That's when my hands go up. Yes, God. Like, I can play all that game. But really then when I'm at home and when I'm alone by myself, all the demons come out. And do I want to be that guy that's duplicitous, has two lives? And I realized, no, I don't want perceived holiness. I want practical holiness. I don't want to be one thing here and one thing there. I want integrity. The root of the word integrity is the word integer, one. I want to be one man out front and one man in the back. I want to be one person. And I realized, man, James 5:16 is blowing me up. If I want to stand firm, I need to stand in one spirit with my brothers and sisters. I need an us. And so I felt like God was like, you want that, you need to confess to somebody else. And I was like, well, Lord, who do I confess to? And 2 Timothy, Paul says, flee youthful lust, pursue righteousness, along with those who call out to God out of a pure heart. Find some people who want God as much as you do, even if they're not your best friends, and get to there. And I felt like God brought a guy to mind. I know he wants to follow Jesus, but I'm like, Lord, I can't confess my sins to him because I just hired him. And it's very important right now that I'm awesomer than him. I just kind of need the psychological leverage. And I felt like God didn't really care about that. Finally, I got to a place where I didn't care about it either, my ego. And I went to him and said, man, I got to share with you some things. And I shared with him all of what I called my drinking nail polish moments. Because I'd read an article about a lady that was an alcoholic. So she got all the hard liquor out of her house. But then she would still find herself sitting on the floor in her bathroom sipping nail polish. Because she had controlled it some, but the addiction was still there. And I realized for me, there's some things that I just can't uproot by myself. And so I confessed to him all of it. The most embarrassing, you know, the things you do that you're like, man, no one's gonna know this weird thing about me. I told him all those. Felt very vulnerable. And then afterwards, I remember looking at him like, so there it is. And I remember his response as he said, well, here's mine. And they were different. And when he was done, I went, you're sick, man. Like, you got problems. No, we did. We both looked at each other like, well, that was insightful, right? What do we do now? And what we did is it said, confess to one another and pray for each other. You may be healed. So we both got on our knees and we began to pray for each other. And we did that all the time. We did it so much that we were texting each other all the time. We would call each other so much that we wouldn't even say hi or bye on the phone. We would just call up and be like, hey man, I want you to know I'm going into this meeting. I'm a little stressed about it, but I don't want to act weird and insecure. I want to come out of place of security so I can say things that are helpful. So can you just pray for that? That's great. You know, and just kind of do that. There were days where he would fast, go without food. You ever had a friend like that who decided, I'm going to go without food, and in the moment I would normally eat, I'm going to set aside time to pray about nothing else but that Jesus would have his way in your heart, in your life. You ever had someone pray for you like that? Let me tell you something, that's powerful. I found victory in areas of my life I always thought I would be broken, and I found it in an us. And as I look across the terrain in ministry, I've watched it very personally, and all of us have watched it in the news, people whose ministries collapse because of moral failure. They're different in the way their sin manifests, but are all alike in one regard, that when they struggle alone. And they weren't willing to share it. And some of you, the most godly thing you'll do this season is not sing another song, though I want you to sing one. It's to find a godly, mature believer and say, here's the areas where it gets me. Will you struggle with me? Will you fight with me? Because here's the reality. When you do that and you find that in my most vulnerable place, that person cares about me, accepts me, and loves me, that empathy will dissolve shame. I remember we had a student in my ministry once that struggled with depression, and it was really bad. So much so that he said, I can't get out of bed sometimes. And I was like, well, man, I don't have all the answers for it. And I know counseling, there's some different elements, but we as a community want to support you and help you. And there's hope for you and you can have a great life. And Martin Luther struggled with a debilitating depression. God used him mightily. A lot of ministers have experienced that. Your life has purpose and value. Let's move together. And I said, man, well, let's share this with some guys. But he didn't want to share it. He was embarrassed about it. And so I wasn't going to force him, but would talk with him, pray with him. But I'll never forget, we were in a community with just a group of guys, a community group setting. And I remember finally in that moment, he just said, hey guys, and he shared it with him. This is what's going on in my life. And what I loved about that moment is there's this other kid that had a similar struggle that leaned forward and went, hey man, me too. And those guys kind of locked eyes and nodded, and they began to pray for each other, support each other, encourage each other. And man, you know what's crazy? Around both of these guys, other people started to come to church. Other people started to get involved. More and more people started to show up. That these guys began to have influence in their communities. Why? Because they didn't feel alone. And once they got over that shame and found empathy, dissolved that shame, they wanted all their friends to experience what they found. You will be fully you when you're willing to be fully you with us. And so one of the ways we honor Christ is with one spirit standing firm together. And yet here's the reality. It's not just about standing to get sin off of us. Although we as a church are committed to that, that's part of what community groups are about. You don't have to show up a community group and share, and then here's my deepest secret. Yeah, you don't have to start there. Community group is to make some friends, but at a community group, that's why we started fight clubs, that you can get a couple people, two, three people that you really share intimately with and struggle with. You need that, and as a church, we want to provide that for you. That's what our next steps are. And yet, it's not just about sin management. Let me get out there and get the icky world off me. We also have a message to get out. We have something we're trying to accomplish. We have good news we want to make known. And so Paul moves on and he says, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, that with one spirit we stand firm. With one mind, strive together for the sake of the gospel to get this good news out. That striving together in Greek is the word soon athluntes. Soon means together. Athluntes is where we get athlete. Let's strive together, not strive together like this. But strive together like this. But it can feel like this sometimes. You know, we're like, I mean, there's times we're like, remember a buddy of mine and I jogging together years ago. You know, and some of you have probably done this. We're like, hey, let's go jogging together. We're like, all right, man, let's just take it like half speed. And we get out there and we're jogging. And then he just gets a little ahead. And there's that voice in your head that's like, oh, no, son, right? Get a little ahead and he's a little ahead. And then I'm going to get a little. And then by the end of it, we're both in a dead sprint, like, ah, and get done or about to throw up. We're like, like, what? Why did we do that, right? And it's just, I'm cool hanging out with you just as long as I'm awesomer than you, right? We do that. Or like, I remember I had a buddy that works for like a video game company, and he was like, hey man, I want to show you this new game we're working on. It's like, we're like a military team. We got to sneak in and save these hostages. And I'm like, all right, man, let's do it. So we pick up, and my little guy like runs forward, kneels down. It's like, all right, let's go. And then suddenly on my screen, it's like sky, grass, and then my controller doesn't work anymore. I'm like, hey man, something's wrong with your game. And he went, no, I think I just shot you in the back of the head. Like, you know, we're never going to get there if you keep doing that. We can't accomplish the mission if you keep shooting me in the back. Right? And it's the same with the church. There's a whole world hemorrhaging in pain, and we're not going to get there if we keep shooting at each other. That's not how this is supposed to work. So we stand together. And we strive together, not against each other. Even if your personalities are different, figure it out. Don't gossip. Don't put negativity in the system. Put love in the system and let's move forward together because there's a hurting world and it needs us. And here's the thing. You may be different than me. You may be wired different than me, but we need us. We need an us. I needed Trey. Remember when I was a young believer and I showed up for college, it was the first time I ever lived in a different town and someone told me, I didn't have any Christian friends. Like a lot of you that moved to this town, you're like, I don't have any friends. I moved to this town. I'm like, I don't know anybody. And someone's like, hey, you should call my buddy Trey. I was like, fine. And I thought he would do what a lot of Christian guys did that I met. You go to coffee and talk about your feelings or something. I was like, all right, I guess I'll go do that with this guy. And so I showed up at his house and he was like, hey man, I don't really want to sit around and drink coffee and talk about our feelings. I thought we would just walk out onto campus and see if people want to talk about God, which as an introvert for me was terrifying. I was like, what? No, I don't want to do that. No. He's like, no, let's just go see what's going to happen. I was like, I'll tell you what's going to happen. We're going to walk up to people. Do you want to talk about God? No, me neither. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to bother you. Sorry. I was like, that's it. Let's just spare each other the awkwardness. And he's like, no, let's just pray about it. I was like, I'll pray. Like, God, you got to get me away from this guy. Like, I don't feel safe. I don't trust him. And it was weird, but I walked out there with him. And there was a group of dudes standing out there. And I remember we walked up to these guys. And he was like, hey, guys. He said, hey, my buddy and I here just dedicated an hour of our day to see if anybody wanted to talk about spiritual things. Want to talk about God. You guys interested? And the guys went, sure. And so he went, all right, what do y'all believe? And they told us. And then they said, what do you believe? He was like, we believe Jesus is the Son of God, that he wasn't just some prophet or some guy, that he's God that came to heaven, lived a perfect life we could not, die the death we deserved, to adopt us into the family of God, make us alive, change us from the inside out, that we're not trying to earn our way to heaven, but God changes us and we become more like him because we know him. And that kind of, he's just explaining all that. And they're sitting there listening to it. And the whole time I'm like, is this like a joke? Is there like a camera on me? Like, is this a trick? And like, what is going on? But we sat there and talked for an hour. And at the end of that hour, the guys were like, hey, we got to go, man. A lot of more international students. And they were like, hey, we've got to go. We got this dinner we're going to go to, but can you guys come with us? Because we're going to meet some friends. And I guarantee they've never heard anything you're saying, and they need to hear this. Wow. I remember when they said that, we were like, this is so crazy. And I got done with that. I'm like, what just happened? But I'll tell you what happened. The next day, a whole world of Bible verses suddenly applied to my life that didn't before. Of telling people the good news of Jesus. I'm not trying to come at you. I'm trying to tell you the best thing I have. I suddenly felt more of who I'm meant to be, and I need a Trey to help me get there. We need us. Some of you, you're great speaking up front. You're great at this, and we need you to be teachers of us. Some people aren't. I know my sister, the first time I ever saw her speak on stage was concerning, just new for her. And she kept making these like weird swallowing sounds. She was just like, And then I'm like, oh God, is she about to throw up? Like, no. And it was concerning. But I remember when she moved up to the same college I did, she's just so good one-on-one. And it was a common thing. Like when she moved there, she was Ben's little sister. That's appropriate. But as the semester went on, people would come up to me and they'd be like, are you Mandy's older brother? I'd be out and they're like, your sister. They start crying and I'm like, what is happening? They're like, she just understands me and has helped me understand myself in new ways. I'm like, what is she doing to you people? Like, I'm not like that one-on-one. I'm like, you good? Yeah, okay, good, great, okay, good talk. Like, I don't know what to say. She's changing lives one-on-one. I was like, wow, I'm not built that way, but we need us. Some of you, this moment terrifies you, but you're great at writing notes, and we need that. How many of you have had your spirits buoyed in a difficult time because of a good word someone wrote down for you, and just the simple act of them putting pen to paper meant the world to you? We need you. Some of you are organizers, and we need you to organize us. I remember early in my ministry life, there was a girl in our ministry that she was kind of a quiet, shy girl, but she just had this conviction, I want to do a car wash. She came to a group of us and she was like, I want to do a car wash. And we're like, why? Like, are we trying to get our name out of our organization? She said, no, I don't want to say any organization's names. And we're like, is it to raise money? And she's like, no, I don't want to take any money. And we're like, why would we do a car wash? And she said, because I want to tell people that Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. And so we wanted to serve you today as followers of Jesus. And we're like, that's so weird. But like, she just really wanted to do it. And she couldn't rally people though. She was trying to get a group together. She's like, hey guys, I'm in car wash for Jesus. We're like, oh. So a couple of us were like, hey, guys, she wants to do a car wash. No, we're not gonna make signs. It's not gonna have a name on it. No, we're not taking up money. Yeah, I don't know. She just wants to do it. We're gonna do it on Saturday. And so we did it. And I remember we showed up out there and she got the parking lot and she got the hoses and she got all the stuff and she had it all mapped out. She had this whole plan of like, some of you will be washing cars. Some of you will be cooking hot dogs because as people get out of the car, we will feed them. And others of you are just rovers to have conversations with people. We're like, wow, you've really thought a lot of this through. I was on rim duty. I'm just like cleaning tires. I remember I was over there doing it and this guy walks up while I'm cleaning the tires. And he's like, hey man, what organization are you doing this for? I said, there's no organization. He said, well, who do I write a check to? You can't write a check. Well, who do I give money to? We're not taking any money. Then why are you doing this? That's a great question. So I gave him the line. I said, because Jesus came not to be served, but serve. And as people who love Jesus, we just thought in his name we would serve people. And I remember I said that to him. And he said, no, no. I was like, yes. Like, what? Like, I'm not even supposed to be talking to you. Like, I'm the wheel guy. Go over there. And but then he sits down next to me and he starts crying. And he says, oh, man. He said, dude, I can't find a job. He said, nobody's helping me. He said, I was on my way to go get drunk this Saturday morning. And he said, and I thought if I got the car washed, my wife would be a little less mad. And then he just started sobbing, face in his hands. And he said, I just can't believe y'all are doing this. And I got to put my arm around this guy and pray for him. One of the most significant moments in my young life. And I would not have been there if this sister hadn't helped me. And I get to be the kind of person I want to be because of her, because of you, because of us. You will never be fully you apart from us. Your human potential won't be reached as an individual. God's rigged it that way. Spirituality is part of a community. So if you're just here checking things out, I'm so glad you're here checking things out. I want you to come here and check things out. Come here and check out what we're talking about. Just keep coming back. That's great. But for some of you that are coming back week after week, and you're, this is my church. I love Jesus. I'm a part of this. We don't really have regular attenders. It's get in the game, man. Come join us. Get in a community group. Get in a fight club. Join a door-holding team. Be a part of us because you need us to stand against your struggles and you need us to strive because there's a city in need and we have the answer. So be a part of us. God has rigged it that way. That's how societies change. In the early church, there were emperors over Rome that hated Christianity. Julian the Apostate was the name of one of those emperors that wanted to stamp out Christianity. And yet he wrote to one of his men in frustration. He says, it is a scandal that there is not a single Jew who's a beggar, that these godless Galileans, he called them godless because he didn't believe in the pantheon of gods, these godless Galileans care not only for their own poor, but ours as well. He says, I'm trying to stomp these people out, but they're so nice that if any of them are poor, they help each other. And if any of us are poor, they help us. If any of them are sick, they care for each other. If any of us are sick, they care for us. He says, I wanted to destroy this community, but look at them. They're so nice. And that loving community changed an empire. And a loving community can change a city. It can change a country. It'll change an individual, but to change a community, it needs a community. God's rigged it to be in us. Now, will there be opposition to your life? Yes. Whenever you decide to make positive changes, I can't run with that crew anymore. They always lead me down. I can't be in this relationship anymore. It's toxic and making me compromise my integrity. I can't be a part of this circle anymore. When you start making those life changes, there's going to be some people that don't understand it. You think you're better than me. You think you're whatever. You're going to run into some opposition. You start inviting people to church. Hey, I want you to be a part of what I'm found. Hey, would you be interested in this? You're going to run into some opposition. Paul tells you, don't be surprised by that. In no way are we alarmed by our opponents. He says, but that's a sign of destruction for them. And that's not a positive thing he's saying. He's like, when people oppose what God is doing in your life, they're opposing what God is doing. That's a scary thing. And we don't need to be mad back at them. You need to pray for them. That's not a healthy place to live your life. He says, that's a sign that something's broken in them, but that's a sign God's working in you. It's when God works in you that you start making changes like this. I need a community to stand with. I need a community to strive with. And you know in that moment, when you start doing this, it's because God's working in you, because it's been granted to you. The text says, not the root of that word granted is the word gift. It's been gifted to you to not just believe, but to suffer for his name. That the two gifts God gives those of us in Jesus, first is to know him and believe in him. And the second is to be a part of what he's doing. And that will involve struggle, but the struggle is worth it because you get to be a part of what his team is doing. So I went to Texas A&M. One person over here has heard of it. It's a school in Texas. Doesn't really matter at this point. But the point is, it's a school in Texas that has a big football tradition, massive football stadium, and it has a tradition there called the 12th man. And it's called the 12th man because way back in the day, like black and white photos back in the day, the team was terrible and people, there was a moment where they were losing a game and there was a basketball player in the stands. And the team was so desperate for help that they went over and found this guy and were like, hey man, can you suit up? Because we probably need you to go in. And this dude was just there in the stands with his girlfriend like, what? And so put on some pads and got ready to go in. E. King Gill. And it was just a rally cry for people. A dude in the stands was ready to go in when the team needed him. And so it became a tradition that we're all the 12th man. We're all ready to step in. So at A&M, you stand the entire game for 4 hours. It's brutal. But the metaphor you're embodying is we're telling the team, I'm ready. If you need an E. King Gill, call me. I'll suit up. Which I think is funny because I just imagine, are they ever going to call you on that? Like, I just want that to happen. At some point, it's going to be going sideways, and in a crowd of 100,000 fans, the coach looks up and is like, Susan, Get down here. Suit up. How would you feel? I imagine terrified, a little confused, but also excited. This is the team I pay money to see, I yell for all the time, I cheer for, and they just told me they need me. How can I say no? So I'm gonna put my pads on. And what if they brought you on the sidelines? That's pretty exciting. People fight to get on the sidelines in a football game and size like that. And get on the sidelines, this is so exciting. I even got the jersey. Can I keep the jersey? This is amazing. This is so cool. What if you were in that moment? And then what if they told you, hey, Susan, we don't just need you here. We need you to get in the game. How would you feel? A little terrified, but a little excited. A little adrenaline spike, dopamine hit. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna live a memory. I'll never forget this. And then they go, okay, we wanna give you the ball because we're right at the goal line. We want you to run the ball across and score. How would you feel? Scared, but if you really love the team, you wanna be a part of the mission. And so if they looked at you and said, do you wanna score? If you cared anything about the team, you'd say, yes. But what if they were like, I don't know though, because someone might bump into you and that might hurt your feelings. Maybe you should stay away from it. If you really loved the team, you'd say, I want to live into the team. Paul Atuas, say, give me the ball. Someone may tackle you. It's worth it. I'll take the hit because I love this team and I want to be a part of what they're doing. We're all made for belonging and mattering. To be a part of a community with a cause is what we all long for. You have God in heaven building a community saying, chase this cause, stand together to help each other when you struggle and strive together to let the world know that I love them and have a future for them. So get in the game. Don't stay on the sidelines. Get in the game. He has given you the gift, not just of believing him, but suffering for his name. He suffered to procure you. Now we suffer to proclaim him. He suffered to make a way for us to be part of his polis. Now we say, I will take up that cause and I'll live in a manner worthy of my great king. I want to run too. And if you're listening to this and go, how do I get a community like that? Let me just tell you, you stay focused and God will build a community. That's what he's done here. We decided we're going to focus on Jesus. He's our lead story. And look at what he's doing. David did have to fight Goliath alone. And as he stood out there and said, you know what? I'm making a decision. I'm gonna follow God no matter what happens. He had to step out on alone. None of his friends went with him. And some of you maybe had to show up here alone. And that's scary. But when David made that step of faith, do you remember the response? Two men, the text tells us, were watching him. Saul, who judged him and hated him because Saul was insecure. And Jonathan, who saw it and loved him. Because Jonathan had just done something that stupid and crazy a chapter before. That when the whole Philistine army attacked and no one was doing anything, Jonathan was like, well, I'm going. And he fought by himself and won. You're like, that dude's nuts. And then when Goliath shows up, David does it alone. And Jonathan's in the back like, that's what I'm saying. Who's that guy? That's my best friend is who that is. I haven't met him. What's your name, best friend? All right. And then he just starts giving him stuff. Read the text. He's like, here's my helmet. Here's my sword. Here's my wallet and keys. He just starts giving him stuff. And when David hit his darkest moment a few chapters later, Jonathan shows up and it says he strengthened his hand in God. Don't you want that? Somebody that when you hit your low moments, they will strengthen your hand in God. That when you struggle in the dark places, you have a phone call to make. Not some broken well to keep going to, but a healthy place to find life and love. Wouldn't that be wonderful? He found that. He had that. So you stay focused. I'm gonna walk with you, God. I am gonna read your word. I am gonna show up. I am gonna walk in a community group. I am gonna be a part of what you're doing. And I believe that as I walk with you, you are building an us. And when I get a part of that us, I will stand with them, knowing they will help me and I will help them. And then we will strive together and we will be who God made us to be because we get to run with the one who made us. That's what life's for. I hope you'll join us.
If you were encouraged by today's talk, be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast.